Welcome to a brand new episode of the Borderless Voices podcast presented by the FCJ Refugee Center.
Welcome to Permission to Exploit, a Borderless Voices special series focusing on closed work permits and labor exploitation, presented by the FCJ Refugee Center.
Permission to Exploit, the system behind the exploitation of temporary foreign workers. When your immigration status as a temporary foreign worker depends on your employer, power shifts. Permission to Exploit is a podcast that combines lived experience specialists and professional specialists' insights to examine Canada's closed permit system and the reforms needed to make it safer. Episode 3, Fear of Retaliation. Threats, deportation fear, blacklist myths, job loss, and immigration consequences. Hi, my name is Jacob Basiches, and I'm an anti-human trafficking migrant caseworker at FCJ Refugee Center. We're here today with Kenny, who experienced workplace labor exploitation right here in Ontario. Today we're going to ask him a few questions about how fears of retaliation kept him under the control of his employer. Hi, Kenny, how are you?
I'm good.
Kenny, can you describe a moment when you felt afraid to speak up at work? What happened?
I felt afraid a couple occasions where at the first I was approached by the manager for the company to remove a crate out of his way while I was in the process of doing my work. And he thought I should remove that crate so he could pass and get back to whatever I was doing. So while he asked me on that occasion, and I said I know nothing about that, he got out of this go-kart, approaching me, folding his fist, and asking me, and telling me that he didn't ask me a question, he was telling me to move that. And that was an occasion where others have witnessed it, but just like myself, can't say anything about it because that's the manager, and say something about that, then it will be, I am deciding that I am willing to go home and I'm here just to earn a better income to take care of my family back home. So that we don't want to defeat my purpose of being here. But with that, he is a bully to others, but others, just like myself, haven't speaking up about it. On the second occasion, I was on a phone conversation, video conversation with a family member back home, who is a Chan family member back home, and the supervisor passed it and saw me having that conversation, and then exposed that I'm talking with a Chan, which is a problem to some, and to to the bunk members, back where I stay, because then now I've been discriminated and been threatened on numerous occasions, but they would use the opportunity, given that the supervisor has left the conversation I had on the phone with the family member back home, open.
Did your employer or supervisor ever suggest that there would be consequences if you complained or asked questions?
Sure. On a number of occasions, we'll be constantly reminded of the consequences of complaining. So normally, they would just say, just get on with the work. Go ahead and just get on with it and get it over with. No need to complain. If you're going to complain, it's best we just send you back home and make somebody else come for your space. So getting that response knowing that you cannot manage, or probably it's a health hazard, or probably it's way out of your capacity, you still would have to comply with their request and do whatever they have to do, because the consequences of what they are laying out to you. So of course, there have been a number of occasions where our employers and supervisors always suggested to us that the consequences of not complying is to be sent back home immediately. And for example, you are there working, doing your all, and you're just sweating, and you need to just sit for a while. Like, you're not going to sit for a 10 minutes, you just want to sit for a minute or two. If a supervisor should see you sitting during any of that work hours, there would be consequences. The consequences, they would normally send you back to the bunk. You have to sign to it, and that's 3 days without pay. They are here not making money. So that's one of the lenient consequences they could have. Or if you get 3 of those lenient consequences, they also would now suspend you, and they have the rights to suspend you up to 3 months. So you'll be here 3 months on a contract without pay, and it will be so pressuring and hard given the situation you are in. Because we have to wait by 4:30 a.m. the latest, in order to be on that bus for 5 a.m. to be on the start working 6 a.m. Start working that hours, the first break would be, by the way, we only get 3 breaks, and at times they will limit it to 2. So if we are going to do 3 breaks, the first break would be 9 a.m. and the next break would be 12 p.m. The third break would be 3 p.m. And those breaks are 30 minutes, not 1 hour. So it's less pressuring. Then you're going to be, it's more pressuring, sorry. And then you're going to be working now for up until 6 or 8 a.m., 9 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m., given the tasks we have to do on that farm.
How did that fear affect the decisions you made day to day at work?
To be honest, it really do affect our working abilities and our work effort for the day, because you're here to complete a task, but at the back of the mind, you're still worried if there are gonna be somebody over your back or somebody in some corner watching you. So it definitely bring your work ethics down by a far minimum percentage.
Did that pressure or fear affect your life outside of work, your family, your coworkers, or your well-being?
Well, up in that small space of time to rest and recuperate, it is definitely a pressuring factor, because there is less time you spend just to keep in touch with your family back home. It's the less time you get to spend as well to do shopping, just even to get vitamins. Like, it was very pressuring, because for instance, we only get a half day on Sundays. So during the week we have no break, unless, as I said before, you have to request a day, and if the day is open, then it will be given. But if it's already taken, that day is out. So if you even need some vitamins, you are running out of food, you don't have any toiletries, anything hygienic for yourself. Stuff that you may want to get at the store, just to have it within your possession for your daily activity. So Yes, it is definitely a pressure on all levels, like it pressuring on you, your work, outside of work, pressuring with the time with the family, your co-workers, and your just your well-being in all respect.
If another worker listening right now is afraid to speak up, what would you want them to know?
Well, I would say if someone is now working on a closed permit, not to be afraid to ask questions. Like if you have more time, or no, don't be afraid to ask. You could ask people like co-workers who are here for a long while, go back home and return back on the contract. You can ask them, because mostly they would have some information that is helpful to you, and you can proceed and to move on to something else. But the thing is, don't be afraid. Never be afraid to ask questions anytime you get the chance, and don't be afraid to research as well. Researching is very important because the information is there. But if we don't spend time to research and to find the information that you really needed, it won't help you. So you'd have to ask questions, speak up, and let the people know what your situation is. Don't be afraid to tell people your situation, because that is the situation you want to get out of. For example, myself, when they canceled my service, I already was asking the questions where we could get an open permit, where I could, how I could go ahead and become a citizen of Canada, a resident. And I was already researching until I met upon someone, openly speak my situation to them, and they introduced me to the FCJ, and I am now an open permit holder, looking now to move on to the next level, only because I'm not afraid to ask questions.
Yeah, that's a great point. You have to, you never know who will be able to help you. You never know who will have the information that you need. And it's important to, you know, be proactive and to ask people for assistance. Anyway, Kenny, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. This has been incredibly helpful. And is there anything else that you want to share before we sign off?
I just want to say thanks to the SEJ and thank you, Jacob, for working with me and helping me, giving me back this level of independent feeling. And I definitely not going to disappoint the SEJ, nor you, nor Canada. I am so happy, and I am looking forward to work back and to do more with the SEJ.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have Anita from Legal Assistance of Windsor.
I'm Diana Kaipa, Anti-Human Trafficking Coordinator at FCJ Refugee Center.
Anita, before we begin, how would you like us to introduce you to our listeners in one or two sentences?
Well, I'm the Migrant Worker Project Coordinator at Legal Assistance of Windsor. We support migrant workers across the Windsor-Essex region with legal information and community-based services like case management, outreach. A big part of my work is also looking at how the system itself creates vulnerability, not just individual situations. So more of like a holistic assessment of how we can, you know, attend to what the workers need, and tailor the supports to that.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. How common is fear of retaliation among migrant workers in Canada?
It's extremely common. It's one of the most consistent things that we hear from our clients, the workers that access our services. So even before workers share what's happening, they'll often ask, like, are you going to tell my employer? Are you going to talk to immigration? Will this affect me, coming back on another contract? That fear is consistent and always present.
And where does that fear usually comes from? Like actual threats, immigration uncertainty, or myths like blacklisting?
I think it's a range. I think it's a mix of direct experiences and what workers hear from other workers. Some workers have been directly told they can be sent home early. Others have seen coworkers suddenly not come to work anymore or be invited back for like another contract. There's also a lot of uncertainty around immigration status, and that alone creates fear. So even if something is a myth, like, oh, you're going to get blacklisted by, this employer, it still feels real enough to shape people's decisions about, if they're going to come forward or not. But I think a big part of that fear is also rooted in how the actual system is set up. So workers know that in many cases, their ability to stay in Canada is in the hands of that one employer. And it can start to feel very like a very stark choice. So you either stay quiet and endure what's happening to you, or you risk losing it all and being sent home. So without something being said directly, that pressure is just always going to be there.
Yeah, you're right. How does that fear affect workers' willingness to report abuse or unsafe conditions?
I mean, a lot of these, conditions and issues that the workers are experiencing go unreported. So, for example, a worker might be dealing with unsafe conditions or like, something to do with their wage, like wage theft, but decides not to report because they're worried about losing their job. So instead, people tolerate situations that should not be acceptable. It wouldn't be acceptable to you or me or you. But the workers feel that they have to, that they have no choice because of the consequences of speaking up feel way too high.
It's true, and you know what? Like even sometimes the like the in their contracts, like they have it as part of it, like this is normal. Or when they come and they have like those sessions, when even like human resources tells them, yeah, this is part of the job, like this is okay, and they were just trying to make it look as something normal, and it is not. So Canada has laws meant to protect workers from retaliation. Why do those protections often fail in practice for migrant workers?
It's just this assumption that workers can come forward safely, and they can't. That's how they feel that they cannot come forward safely. If a worker has to risk their job or like housing, or the ability to send money back home just to file a complaint, that protection doesn't feel very meaningful in that moment to them. So they have to weigh it out and triage, like, should I, what is the best course of action for me? And they're not just thinking about themselves, they're thinking about their family, there's also the reality that enforcement doesn't always happen quickly, and workers can't afford to wait while their situation becomes more unstable. So if there is an investigation happening, and they're waiting for the conclusion, or the decision on that, and they're experiencing, the harm starts to increase at work for them. There's also, the psychological and the emotional impacts of that as well, that often get glazed over or not considered. So it's not just an anti-retaliation fail, protection fail. It's an overall fail for the worker.
Yeah, it's true. What changes would most effectively reduce this fear and allow workers to speak up safely?
Again, like getting moving away from a closed work permit system and allowing them the mobility and the freedom to be able to, speak up about their experiences with and if it results in termination, then they have the ability to go seek other employment. They need real options, not just rights on paper. Like it needs to translate. They need faster access to open work permits when people are in, when they're in vulnerable situations. And stronger and more protective enforcement of labor standards as well. So again, it's one thing to see that on a piece of paper, but the enforcement of it and is critical for these folks. At the end of the day, people need to feel that they can speak up without risking everything. And right now, many workers don't have that, and they don't feel that.
What would you tell, like, the people who are listening to us that probably is not under a closed work permit and is just here because want to learn more about this topic?
I think it's just important to become more informed on this, like listening to podcasts like this, or if you can attend community events or reading, read as much as you can on there's actually the UN Special Rapporteur. That's a really important, critical document that is accessible for folks to tap into online. And the language used in that is accurate and really, it basically names the temporary foreign worker system as modern day slavery. That's very impactful. I would also advise people to think critically. So when you're reading these headlines coming from government that are so recklessly put and using, reckless language like safer communities or stronger borders, let's keep our communities safe. I mean, it really frames migrant workers and immigrants as, a threat to Canadians and Canadian society. I think it's important to challenge even ourselves, right? And to not take comfort in neutrality, but to really speak up and to understand that locating the problem in the individual is never the answer. Is never the answer. You have to look at the systems and how the systems interact with one another, the labor system interacting with the immigration system, and how vulnerable populations interact with those systems. So, that's why we engage in the systemic advocacy and we push back on these narratives and try to, educate and inform communities that there's so much more to this. And these are wonderful, hardworking human beings that are being brought here to stimulate our economy, to put affordable food on our table, and they should have equal rights. The same rights as Canadian workers, and to have workers come here and do that, but to not want to rub shoulders with them and look at them as our neighbor, but just imported labor is really disheartening.
And to close this episode, if we have probably one of those workers who are facing abuse or exploitation at their workplace, what would you like them to know?
I would like them to know that there are people, there are allies in these communities that will, advocate for you and fight for you and inform you of your rights. You are not alone. You are not without any options. We are here to support you and to please reach out to these organizations. Even if you reach out to the first organization and it's not the right service, like they can make a referral to the appropriate service. So we all work so closely in collaboration with one another, and we are here to support you.
Well, thank you very much for being here with us. For many migrant workers, silence is not consent, it is survival. And when fear becomes part of the job, exploitation becomes much harder to see and much easier to sustain. Thanks for listening. To never miss an episode, subscribe to Borderless Voices at fcjrefugeecenter.org, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.